Hello and welcome. I'm Miranda Gibson and you're listening to Until All Are Free, a radio documentary special exploring the stories of Eric McDavid and Marie Mason, environmental activists who are both serving sentences of around 20 years in prison in the United States. We'll be looking at why they are considered to be political prisoners and the international implications of their cases. We'll be joined by Eric McDavid's partner Jenny, who is part of Sacramento Prisoner Support. Peter Wirrabee will fill us in on the story of Marie Mason. Independent journalist and author of Green is the New Red, Will Potter, shares his insights into the political context of these cases. And former Earth Liberation political prisoner Jeff Lewis brings his personal perspective on what prisoner solidarity means and why he continues to fight for a better world.
All going to prison served to do was, I think, help me prove to the world that my argument's right and just.
First, let me introduce myself. My name's Miranda, and I recently spent over 14 months at the top of a tree defending Tasmania's ancient forests from industrial-scale logging. Some people called me a hero for the sacrifices that I had made to stand up for what I believe in. But I don't think I'm a hero. I'm just one amongst many, many people on this planet standing up for the earth and for justice, many of whom risk harassment, displacement, imprisonment, even death, sacrificing a lot more than a year of their life in a tree. Today's documentary is sharing just one part of that global story, looking at the cases of two political prisoners who were targeted for their environmental activism and labelled as terrorists, and who are now serving decades behind bars. You might be wondering why, as a forest activist, I'm telling this story about prisoners. The short answer would be that all of our struggles are interconnected. The long answer probably begins with my time in the tree. It was an amazing experience to spend over a year in the upper canopy of an old growth forest, but it wasn't without its challenges. And as time went on, for me, one of the hardest things became the loneliness and isolation. What really kept me going through all of that was the constant stream of support I had from people around the world. And I learnt firsthand the power of solidarity and how much a simple message of support can mean. It was this that first inspired me to send a message from the treetops of a remote old growth forest to a prison cell on the other side of the world. And that was the beginning of my friendship with Eric McDavid. What I didn't realise is that it would also be the beginning of a journey to uncover a story beneath the myth of American democracy, realising that those who act with political ideology and the will to create a better world are punished as terrorists, regardless of the fact that no one was injured as a result of their actions, and for some, regardless of whether they took any action at all. Realising that these laws begin to spread, encompassing broader and broader sections of the population, so that now new laws are being discussed in the United States that if implemented here would see me spending as much time in jail as I just spent in a tree, simply for the act of being in a logging zone. While supporting Eric and other political prisoners is still at the core of this issue for me, it has also become about much more. And that's why today I want to take you on this journey too. So let's start with the story of my friend Eric McDavid, who is currently serving a sentence of 19 and a half years after being charged with a single count of conspiracy. His arrest was the result of an FBI informant known as Anna, whose questionable approach led many to label Eric's case as entrapment. I spoke with Eric's partner Jenny to give us more detail.
In 2004, he became friends with this person that he knew as Anna. She spent the next year and a half of her life befriending Eric, sort of drawing him in romantically, and also befriending two other people and sort of creating this alleged conspiracy, pushing them all into it. And then ultimately, of course, that ended up in the three of them getting arrested and Eric, you know, then getting convicted and sentenced to 20 years in prison, basically for something that never happened. No actions were ever carried out in Eric's case. Nothing was ever damaged or destroyed. He was really just accused of thinking or talking about doing things.
As you say, Eric received this long sentence of almost 20 years. Why was there so much disparity between his sentence and that of his two co-defendants?
Unfortunately, what ended up happening is that Zach and Lauren both flipped and started cooperating with the government. That included testifying against Eric at trial. And of course, in exchange for that cooperation, the government then sought lower sentences for them. Lauren was sentenced first, and she received time served, which for her was about 2 weeks. And for Zach, who was sentenced a month or two after Lauren, that was about 6 months.
When Eric was convicted, he was given the longest sentence of any environmental prisoner in the United States at that time, until Marie Mason's arrest in 2008, in which he was eventually sentenced to 22 years. Peter Wirrabee tells us why.
Marie Mason is serving 22 years in federal prison for two acts of environmentally related vandalism in which no one was injured. Her days are spent in a maximum security, highly restricted section of a notorious prison far from her family and friends. For 3 years now, Marie's feet have only touched concrete and her view of the sky has been obstructed by wire mesh. After federal prosecutors threatened her with a life sentence in 2009, Marie pleaded guilty to actions committed 9 years earlier, damaging an office connected to GMO, genetically modified organism research, and destroying logging equipment. As part of her plea bargain, she was expecting a lesser sentence. However, due to the severe terrorism enhancement provision of the Patriot Act, she was given the harshest punishment of anyone convicted of environmental sabotage to date. An appeal for reduction of her sentence was rejected in 2010. Marie is considered a Green Scare prisoner, and that reflects the Red Scare of the World War I era in the States and also the 1950s, the McCarthy era. And she is so because the penalties have been so severe, way in excess of what people convicted of similar crimes faced.
Independent journalist Will Potter investigated this phenomenon known as the Green Scare and published a book on the topic titled Green is the New Red.
My book is about how environmental activists and animal rights activists became the FBI's number one domestic terrorism threat in the United States. And I look at the history of these campaigns by corporations and politicians to single out nonviolent environmental activists as terrorists and actually to create new laws and new specialized prison units that target them as well.
One of the earliest Green Scare cases was that of Jeff Lewis, who was arrested in 2000 after setting fire to three SUVs in a car dealership in order to raise awareness about climate change. Jeff was labelled as a terrorist and originally sentenced to 22 years and 8 months. Jeff later won an appeal in which his sentence was deemed to be illegal, and he eventually was released after 9.5 years. I asked Jeff to share his story about why he took the action that he did.
In many ways, it was participating in forest defense that really showed me how corrupt the system really was. And I just sort of got to a point where you see all this injustice happening around you all the time. And you see, at least in this country, you see people that just don't really pay attention to it. Their eyes just sort of glaze over and it glosses by them because it doesn't directly affect them, or at least they don't think it does. But climate change is affecting everybody right now. And there's millions of people that are already beginning to suffer as a result of it. And so in June 2000, me and Craig Critter Marshall hatched a plan to set three light trucks on fire at a local car dealership in an effort to draw attention to climate change. Unbeknownst to us, though, we were under surveillance by a counter-terrorist unit that was operating as part of the Joint Terrorist Task Force. For a fire that lasted approximately 12 to 15 minutes, destroyed one vehicle and damaged two others, I ultimately received a sentence of 22 years and 8 months.
Just 22 years old, 22 years to go. An awfully long time to serve. For burning a cop, I don't care who you are. 22 years, nobody. You can philosophize the way you think things should be. Turn your head, hope it disappears. Somewhere tonight, there's a young man named Free in a cell serving 22 years. 22 years.
the lengthy sentences that you and other environmental prisoners have received, would you define yourself, Eric and Marie, as being political prisoners?
What's happening is we see that these individuals are being punished more harshly because of the political ideology in which their actions are carried out. So in other words, to give a comparison with my case, I set a fire that destroyed, you know, one car, damaged two others, and I went to prison with a sentence of 22 years and 8 months. At the same exact time, a woman by the name of Tamara Meredith, who was an Oregon firefighter, set fire to 1 million acres of forest in the state of Oregon, destroyed multiple dwellings and houses, and was sentenced to 3 years for that arson. So what we see is, regardless of the scale of the incident, if there are political ideologies in play that run counter to the status quo, the punishment is going to be harsher. And by the very nature of law, that would define that individual as a political prisoner.
Every step of the process, from in Eric McDavid's case, the use of informants to entrap him, to follow him around the country, the use of Anna, this young woman who was being funded by the FBI to collect information on political activists and to build a case against him when it was clear that there was no evidence that these activists were actually going to follow through on any of the plans that she was putting forward. And in Marie Mason's case, how she was labeled as a terrorist and hit with a terrorism enhancement penalty in the courts for merely destroying property. And in both of those cases, Eric McDavid and Marie Mason are facing decades behind bars because of the nature of their politics, not because of what they did, but because of what they believe.
I definitely think Eric is a political prisoner. If you look at why he was targeted and how he was targeted, it was absolutely because of his politics and because he identified as an anarchist. Anna was sent into the Crime Think Convergence specifically to target anarchists. And then, you know, throughout Eric's trial, they continually talked about not only things like anarchism, but also activism in general, his involvement in environmental work. They talked about things like the kind of books that he read, and then, of course, tried to use all of this against him. So, you know, the entire prosecution through and through from the get-go was incredibly politically motivated, including, as you said, his sentence. People who are charged with similar things, but not because of their politics, end up with sentences that are much, much lower than what Eric received. And, you know, keep in mind that Eric didn't even carry out an arson. He was accused of thinking about carrying out an arson.
As we're talking about groups that are labeled the number one domestic terrorism threat, it's important to point out the groups who are not being labeled as terrorism threats. And those include right-wing extremists who have been involved in murdering human beings, attacking people because of their sexual orientation, their race, their ethnicity, their religious beliefs. Moreover, we've seen since the late 1990s an exponential increase in right-wing violence. There was a report that came out from West Point, and they documented a 400% increase in right-wing violence over the last several decades. As this is all taking place, the crimes by animal rights and environmental activists have never actually harmed a human being in this country. So I think it's a really important question to ask is, why are environmental activists being singled out as terrorists when people who have actually murdered human beings are not being targeted in this way?
The things they say you did are not crimes to me. CEOs destroy the earth, they stay rich and free.
When I started researching and writing about these issues, I really started by focusing on money, because I think anytime you talk about politics, not just in the US, but really in any country, you have to talk about money and the political interests that are tied to that money and that profit. And with the environmental movement, I think really more than any other social justice movement, is directly challenging corporate profits in really bold and unique ways. Not just with people like Eric McDavid and Marie Mason, or nonviolent activists using civil disobedience, but really the entire environmental movement at its core is about threatening corporate power and using that lifestyle decisions and also direct action to threaten corporate profits. And I think that's a big part of why these activists are being singled out as terrorists right now, the influence of corporations on the political process.
That was Will Potter, author of Green is the New Red. You're listening to Until All Are Free. My name's Miranda, and it was my experience of spending 14 months at the top of a tree that inspired me to start investigating this issue when I started writing to political prisoners. Interestingly, people would often say that my tree sit was like a self-imposed prison, but I would say no, it's nothing like prison, and I think for those of us on the outside, it's actually impossible to imagine and to know what that experience must really be like. When I spoke to Eric's partner, Jenny, she shared some of Eric's story about his time in prison and also her personal experiences of supporting him these past 7 years.
Probably the hardest place to be was Sac County. That was the first place he went after he was arrested. He was in what was called total separation, which is basically solitary confinement. So the entire time he was there, he didn't have any cellmates. He wasn't supposed to be out of his cell when other people were, when we visited him. They had to block off the entire floor for visitation. All of our visits were behind a wall of glass. So, you know, we had the silly phones that were sort of hard to hear. And also we couldn't touch each other for the first 2.5 years. Watching your loved ones go through something so terrible and intense through glass is really traumatic. I don't really think there's any way to explain that unless you've been through it. After that, he went to a place called Victorville. Some things about it were better. He was out in general population, so he could, you know, meet people and make friends. And probably the best thing for me, anyway, was that visits there were contact. So that doesn't mean that we got to, you know, touch each other the entire time. But what that means is when I got there and when I left there, we would get to greet each other and say goodbye with a hug and a kiss. So that was the first time, you know, we had been able to touch since he was arrested. But in general, you know, it's prison and it sucks. His steadfastness and a really like ability to stay sort of grounded and healthy, even in incredibly adverse conditions, I think has been really inspiring. The day that he was convicted and the verdict came down, you know, I was a mess and his family was a mess. And he turned around and looked at all of us and very calmly and sort of in a very grounded fashion said, "Breathe." He just really spends more time worrying about us rather than like worrying about himself. And he has been really successful at building relationships with a lot of people, both inside and outside of prison. And, you know, I think that has helped him stay mentally and emotionally healthy in a lot of ways. Honestly, I don't know how he does it. It's hard. It's definitely not easy.
Former political prisoner Jeff Lewis talks from his personal experience about the ways in which people on the outside can show solidarity for those behind bars.
I think I and every other political prisoner I know would say, keep fighting. I would much rather see people use their actual energy to get out in the streets or get out in the darkness or do whatever they can to actually contribute to making this world better. However, I also recognize that not everyone is in a position to be able to actively engage like that. And so, you know, writing prisoners, putting prisoner letter writing campaigns together, or just engaging in any meaningful way is always welcome. Prison can be a very, very lonely place, and it's really awesome to get to meet new people. I know that I definitely have some people that are I mean, basically family to me now, and that entirely started with the exchange of one letter.
Building relationships with people inside is really powerful, not only for them, but also for us. I really can't stress enough the importance of writing letters to folks, just to, you know, to let them know that they're not forgotten, but also that they're still important to us and our movements and our communities, and to sort of keep them involved. Because, you know, these are folks who were really committed to the work that they were doing. And that's why they're where they are. And so I think in a lot of ways, feeling alienated and isolated from those communities and those movements can be one of the hardest things for folks about being in prison. And of course, you know, unfortunately, being in prison is expensive. And I think that any sort of like monetary help that folks can give is always super appreciated. Support funds are what enable folks to maintain their connections with loved ones. And, you know, also just talking to people about his case. Unfortunately, you know, Eric's case wasn't the first and certainly has not been the last.
As Jenny mentioned, simply talking to others about these issues is an important way to show support. I know for me, since I started writing to Eric and came to understand further the political implications of cases like his, I've been talking to my friends and family about this issue. Even my mum started writing to political prisoners. Yet there are some folks I've spoken to who say, why is this relevant to me? Or why should I support Eric and Marie when I don't necessarily agree with the tactics they engaged in as activists? So I asked my guests of today's radio show what their response would be to these types of concerns.
Well, there's a number of reasons. There's a practical response, and that is the government is ramping up the machine of repression, everything from militarization of the police to these extended sentences. So the questions of the tactics that Marie carried out aren't really what's at issue. This affects anybody who's going to protest, anybody who's going to say no to the machine. We need to be out there for them, if for no other reason than simple justice demands a reduction in these sentences.
Eric was arrested for what amounts to thought crime. He was very clearly the target of entrapment. And, you know, that could happen to anybody. And then as far as cases like Marie, I think it's really important for folks to remember that we're all working for the same thing here. Marie did above ground activism as well as underground activism for much of her life. You know, she really took her ideas and her passion and did what she thought was best for the earth and for other people. And in doing those things, she never, you know, she never harmed another person or another living being.
We really have to get beyond this idea of tactics, because it's far more divisive than it is unifying. It's not about who uses what tactic. It's about what tactic works. And really, the bottom line is we haven't found a tactic that works. So I would actually encourage people to begin working together and actually thinking about things strategically and how we can go about creating change, rather than taking certain positions that then allow us to define someone as an other. We somehow then are able to dismiss that person's opinion because we don't agree with their tactics.
Disagreements over those tactics simply don't matter. And I say that not to dismiss the importance of having discussions within movements about tactics, because I think that's very valid and necessary. But the government really is seeing no distinction between people like Marie and people like the Humane Society or the Sierra Club. What we're seeing now is people being singled out for heavy prison sentences and increased penalties and being criminalized for doing strictly nonviolent undercover investigations of animal welfare abuses on factory farms and slaughterhouses, and for nonviolently blockading roads and putting their bodies on the line in the trees to prevent them from being destroyed. And so I think it's really important to see that broader political picture, regardless of whether you think it's a good idea to destroy corporate property in the name of the Earth Liberation Front. I would hope that even if you disagree with those tactics, you would disagree more with the government's priorities of labeling these people as the number one domestic terrorism threat.
You're listening to Until All Are Free, and we've been talking about environmental political prisoners. A significant annual event is the June 11th International Day of Solidarity with Eric McDavid, Marie Mason, and long-term anarchist prisoners.
June 11th started as an International Day of Solidarity with me because I was sentenced on June 11th, 2001 to those 22 years and 8 months. I think the largest event that we had encompassed almost 12 countries and 48 different cities. That was really amazing for me to be able to receive that amount of support. And as I approached my release date, I strongly encouraged the transition to being an International Day of Support with all environmental liberation prisoners worldwide. And that's really most directly impacted Eric McDavid and Marie Mason as the individuals serving the longest sentences right now for those types of actions.
That old IWW slogan, they're in there for us, we're out there for them. That's what we're showing on the June 11th International Day of Solidarity.
Eric and Marie are in for, you know, 20, 22 years. And to sustain support for that long is going to require some ingenuity and some dedication and commitment. And so things like June 11th that happen annually are a really good way to build that kind of solidarity that sort of keeps these folks alive and involved in the movements and struggles that they were a part of.
For starters, you know, it really brought a smile to my face. It helped my case get much larger attention because it always became a media spectacle. And I think that it really helped to remind the people holding me captive that the world was really watching. And I think that there's a lot of strength in that. And I think that's what Eric and Marie both need, is to have the support of our entire struggle and our entire movement behind them.
You can find out more at June11.org. Of course, it's not just once a year that we need to be talking about these issues. Prisoner solidarity needs to be an integral part of all of our movements for environmental and social change, not just in the United States where Eric and Marie are imprisoned, but internationally. As a forest activist from Australia, I asked Will Potter what the international implications are for the way in which environmental and animal rights activists are currently being treated in the US.
We've often talked about state repression, meaning when the government oversteps its bounds and singles out people because of their political beliefs. I would argue what's going on right now is really a shift in a lot of ways to what I would call corporate-driven repression. In other words, corporations have been behind this every step of the way. We have to remember that under neoliberalism and global capitalism, corporations have no boundaries. They have no limits to any nation state. They pursue their profits around the world. And as they pursue their profits, they take these tactics with them.
We live in a globalized police state. The U.S. is basically the international police leader if being able to put people in prison and label them as terrorists for their activism is successfully implemented here, then it's going to be successfully implemented in Australia and England and Germany, and the list is going to go on and on and on.
I think the takeaway from that is not to really throw up our hands and think, well, there's nowhere to hide from this type of repression. There's nothing we can do about it. But instead, I think we should take inspiration from it and to share tactics of resistance, to share information about how all of this is happening so that we can better respond to this repression and better fight back.
These are folks who are working for and struggling for the same things. You know, we're all involved in these movements because we care about liberation for people, for animals, for the earth. And I think that we, you know, when we stand together, we're stronger. And I think that that includes people in other countries and other places. And I know, you know, on a personal level, for Eric and for me too, just knowing that there are people in other places who support him and support me often has been incredibly helpful for us emotionally and sort of strengthened our resolve.
I spoke to Jeff Lewis about what it was that sustained him through his years of forest defense activism and through his 9.5 years in prison.
Knowing that the injustice in the world that I'm fighting is real, that I am capable of making a difference, and because I'm capable of making a difference, it means I'm responsible to try. And so for my own core sense of honor and well-being and ability to look myself in the mirror every day, I need to stand up against all the horrible things in the world going on around me that I can actually directly affect. I think far too often we allow ourselves to pass our responsibility off to someone else, and we therefore in the process give our own power away. I mean, all going to prison served to do was, I think, help me prove to the world that my argument's right and just. They tried very hard to make an example out of me, to scare other people into not taking the types of actions I had or resisting the dominant capitalist culture. And in their effort to silence me and make an example of me, what they really ended up doing was putting me in the international spotlight. And they didn't know how to handle that. I mean, I was thrown into solitary confinement a number of times for being able to do interviews or get my writings published in major magazines. They really didn't like the fact that 90% of the media that I interacted with portrayed me in a fairly good way and portrayed this idea of climate change being a huge threat as really serious business. What we're going to be seeing is a lot more of the direct impacts of climate change and environmental crisis. And I think as those impacts become more frequent and observable, we're going to see a rise in resistance to the industries, the corporations, and the government policies that have allowed this crisis to continue and come into existence. And as a result of that, then we're also going to see, you know, the powers that be trying to quell that dissent by throwing people into prison, arresting them. So I think we have to stop thinking about going to jail or being arrested as a possibility and start thinking about those scenarios as an inevitability. The whole nature of being a resistor means that you are in opposition to what our power structures stand for. And the only way to truly be effective and be in opposition to that successfully is to not be afraid of the consequences. And until we get to the point where we are able to simply say, you know what, I'm free and I'm not scared of you, we're not going to be able to create change. We really have to find a way to break the shackles that force us to live a life that is unfulfilling, unsatisfying, and responsible for the worst catastrophe to ever face the planet.
You've been listening to Until All Are Free, a radio documentary special about environmental political prisoners Eric McDavid and Marie Mason. I'd like to thank our guests on today's show, Will Potter, author of Green is the New Red, Peter from Support Marie Mason, Jenny from Sacramento Prisoner Support, and former political prisoner Jeff Lewis. Thank you for listening, and if you'd like more information, you can visit Eric's website, supporteric.org, and Marie's website, supportmariemason.org.